Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Project Rostrum, where a couple of plebes try to unpack current events around the world. This is Brian Krieger, and today is episode 2 of the podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Stephen Shepherd, and we'll be covering political partisanship related to sexual assault, recent allegations against Minnesota Senator Al Franken, and the ever-increasing number of allegations against Republican candidate for Senate Roy Moore, and related news. We will also address the Republican push for tax reform and a bill that recently passed in the House. But first, a new experimental segment called Around the World. We begin the segment with a somber account in the Daily Beast of Staff Sergeant Logan Melger, decorated Green Beret for the Army's 3rd Special Forces, who served 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan. He was found dead back in June while on a secret assignment in the West African nation of Mali. The NCIS investigation to his death, which initially reported as alcohol-related, became highly questionable when autopsy reports revealed no signs of alcohol in his system. Special forces in Mali typically operate in intelligence gathering capacity, supporting Malian and French troops against the growing threat of militant Islamists in the region. Melger was initially brought to the hospital after efforts were made to resuscitate him following an altercation that led to him being incapacitated. He was initially reported to be found in his apartment unresponsive until his autopsy results declared his death to be asphyxiation by homicide. The story then changed, with 2 Navy SEALs claiming Melger was drunk during combatives and was accidentally asphyxiated. It was at this point the discovery was made that Melger did not have any alcohol in his system, and one source in the Daily Beast account claimed Melger did not drink at all. This account was also confirmed in a New York Times story the following day. At this point, the investigation escalated. Melger's wife expressed suspicion over emails that were shared with her to investigators concerning the situation involving his teammates. Later, it was reported by the New York Times that Melger had uncovered a skimming operation related to funds used for paying informants. 2 Navy SEAL team members are currently believed to have been involved in the scheme uncovered by Melger, which escalated into the aforementioned altercation. Melger was supposedly accidentally asphyxiated. Attempts were made to revive him, which failed, and led his teammates to deliver his body to a local hospital. Staff Sergeant Logan Melger was posthumously awarded the Defense Meritorious Service Medal and is actually scheduled to be buried at Arlington Cemetery today, November 20th, 2017. So, yeah, wow.
Rest in peace, Staff Sergeant Melger.
Indeed. That's unfortunate, man. It kind of sucks. Because we do a lot of stuff out there, and we really have to trust each other, and it appears that's okay. Breaking down a little bit. I read about this a little bit, and there didn't seem to be any precedent for this. It was kind of an unprecedented thing that happened. 2 service members murdering another service member because he uncovered some dirty shit that they were into. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing about anything like this before. I'm sure something like this has happened somewhere. You know, there's a lot of things that soldiers have found, especially over in Iraq. There's a lot of wealth to be found in some of those Arab countries. But something like this, I mean, he was just trying to do the right thing.
Absolutely.
I'm sure he didn't want to say anything about it. I'm sure he didn't want to get anybody in trouble, but at the same time,
I mean, they offered like to said, get we've got him to be in able on to the action, I think.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I guess it's good for him for not going for it, but, man, it's awful the way it ended.
Yeah. That does suck, man.
Indeed.
So, yeah, rest in peace, Sergeant Melger. Elsewhere in the world, the European Union made a bold move to decrease dependence on the United States for defense and signed a pact to further integrate their military spending and operational capacity. The primary opponent of such agreement, the United Kingdom, voted to exit the EU earlier this year, thus removing the primary obstacle to such an agreement. Most advocates of the deal think this will create a stronger military component to U.S.-led NATO operations. European defense industry also appears to be excited at the prospect of a more cooperative environment for defense research and development.
I think this sounds like a great idea. I mean, it puts a little less pressure on us and makes them more self-reliant, especially if we're going to get some more defense research and development. And, you know, hopefully that'll just make any NATO operations that we have better, more successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I think the main sort of counter argument to this is that it's like how many giant super militaries do we need in the world? And it can be kind of dangerous because America, when we fumble something, it's pretty ugly. you know, like invading a country for a reason that we didn't really have good evidence to support the intelligence that we were saying that we did. And they just kind of follow our lead for the most part. But they'll definitely, if they're consolidating in a pretty big manner, they'll be able to undergo sort of their own stuff. So I wonder how much the US-led component of this is going to matter in the future. And I think that's why Britain is kind of opposed to it a little bit. Right now, they just all kind of follow our lead, and nobody really has to take the blame for anything. America can take all of the nasty blame for all of the nasty stuff that people want to blame the Western world on us. Yeah, I guess there's sort of a bad history with these kind of alliances. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure what the good counter arguments are, but I know there's definitely some British people that are not too happy to see something like this going down.
Well, let's just hope it's a move for the better.
Yeah, indeed. So in Libya, it appears that CNN was able to obtain footage of a modern-day slave auction taking place, a story that was released on November 13th by CNN. Libya has been a staging ground for refugees and migrants, both fleeing conflict and stagnant economic conditions in search of better opportunities by making their way across the Mediterranean and into Europe. Due to the often illegal nature of these activities, gangs and smuggling rings have become rampant in an effort to take advantage of the situation. These reports are the latest horrible chapter in the ongoing immigration crisis in the European Union. Migrants will pay smugglers for passage into Europe, an already dangerous prospect which often results in death, then be sold into slavery as farm or factory labor once they run out of cash, instead of being given passage into Europe. Reporters for CNN on the ground in Libya estimate that approximately two auctions take place each month. On November 17th, CNN also reported that Libyan authorities had begun investigating it.
You know, of all the horrible things that happen to someone, you know, you're fleeing a bad situation and then get put into the worst situation you could be in because you're broke.
Yeah. Slavery is such an ugly word, man.
It is.
I mean, I guess the good side is
still happening.
Yeah, I guess the one takeaway, I watched the video of this in the article and
I saw it.
I kind of like read about it a little bit more. One of the people that they interviewed said that he had been sold in one of the auctions before. So it seems like it's like you can get sold into slavery, but the fact that the slaves are selling for around like the equivalent of $400 means that nobody has the infrastructure to actually keep people, you know, so it's kind of like a gamble and a lot of people escape probably, but I'm not excusing it. I want to make that very clear. This is terrible crap, but it's not, you know, we're not like going back 150 years yet and Libya is investigating it, but partially our fault again. Libya is not the most stable government right now.
Two auctions.
Anything else?
Did it say how many people in each auction?
I think I can't remember, but it wasn't a lot. It was like,
I mean, one
like four and eight or something. They sold two. Like they had the account that they showed was two people being sold for around $800, like whatever it was, like Libyan dinars, like 1200 or 1400, whatever the equivalent of $800 is. Which that's pretty low amount of money, which makes me think that it's not, like I said, nobody has the infrastructure to actually keep people impressed as slaves or whatever to a degree, I guess.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, I was just saying, hopefully Libya can get something done about this. I mean, you know, as you said,
yeah, for sure. That would be good. They're in a pretty chaotic position right now, though.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact details, but speaking of countries in chaos, in Zimbabwe and Zambia, the Trump administration made an effort to lift the ban on the import of elephant trophies this week, according to an ABC News story on November 14th. The questionable move sparked very vocal opposition from many groups and looks to be universally unpopular, according to most media accounts in the news. This is likely due to the fact that elephants in these countries are listed as endangered, or listed on the Endangered Species Act. Instability in the regions have stymied conservation efforts by advocacy groups, and this move would almost certainly exacerbate these efforts. The move comes in the midst of a chaotic situation that looks like a potential military coup in Zimbabwe, with President Mugabe being confined under house arrest by the Zimbabwe Defense Force, which also took place this week. Mugabe was able to appear on television November 17th on an ABC News reported that a very large public protest numbering in the thousands took place the following day. The Trump administration, apparently caving to public pressure, tweeted that he will be putting the trophy hunting ban reversal on hold until he can review information further.
I don't even know how to say how horrible of a thing it is to hunt an elephant for a trophy anyways. I mean, any animal, just to hunt it for a trophy is bad in my opinion, but...
Yeah, elephants are kind of like dolphins.
And especially an endangered smart species. I mean, if it's on the Endangered Species Act, then, you know, obviously there's not many of them left. So to allow them to not only hunt them, but to bring the trophies back here is just saying that it's okay. And it's not.
Yeah. There's actually a pretty sizable contingent of veterans that go and do work to try and limit poaching activity in a lot of these countries. It's really popular. You can see it on Instagram. And a lot of guys who did tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, when they get out of the military, they go and peddle their skills in Africa, you know, trying to do stuff like this. It's really good humanitarian activity.
Well, props to those guys for trying to do something good. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, I follow a few of these people on Instagram, and these are his supporters. You know, these are Trump administration supporters, a lot of them. And this just kind of like flies in the face of, like, I don't know, man. It feels like a major fumble on their part. Maybe they just thought they could sneak this one in under the radar and it wouldn't get seen. But when are old people going to learn that this is the age of the internet and you can't sneak anything under the radar anymore?
Well, luckily with that, it won't be too much longer. There's not going to be any people around that still think you can.
Yeah, who knows, man? That's a bad one, too.
Just get better at it.
In Iraq, the New York Times recently published a bombshell story alleging that U.S. airstrikes in the region are apparently as high as 31 times more lethal than being reported by coalition officials. The U.S. military leaders often complained about having their hands tied and operational capacity being degraded by the bureaucracy under the Obama administration, under which most of these strikes took place. The New York Times report included a very detailed account of one of the survivors of one such U.S. strike that decimated his home and killed his entire family in Mosul, Iraq. The Trump administration so far appears to have given the U.S. military even broader operational decision-making authority since assuming office. Now, first, before I ask you for comments, I'm going to highly recommend to anyone that listens to this that they read this New York Times article. You can look it up. The article is called Uncounted Civilian Casualties in Iraq Airstrikes. It's a very well-cited, well-researched article and makes a very good case for what they're saying is, in fact, true here.
Well, I'd like to add to what you just said. Yeah, definitely, let's read the article. So. Very well written. Just to go through what that guy went through, just that's not a singular story. That happens a lot. I mean, I saw it firsthand when I was in Iraq. You know, we'd either get intelligence that somebody was in a house that wasn't there, and you know, we saw the Apache take out a house and come to find out it was the wrong house. I mean, it's unfortunate.
You get
part
information.
Of war. It's not. I'm not saying it's an unfortunate part of war to excuse it. Like it's just should you know be okay. It shouldn't be okay. There's no way to make it okay. It just shouldn't happen. Period. And it does, and it's going to continue to happen. Especially if they're having more decision making authority, then hopefully it doesn't get worse.
Yeah, these are tough calls. Like when you get information from an informant, you have to look at the intelligence, and analysts will look at it and. Ultimately, they'll make a decision to decide, you know, is this guy reliable? Has he provided intelligence that was good in the past? How valuable is his target? Is it worth a gamble?
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of stuff goes into that. And I mean, you're making 100 decisions a day about what you're going to do. You're going to have some screw ups. And apparently we were having a lot, even though we were complaining about the oversight. And now we have even less oversight. So... I don't think this is a good direction, for sure. Maybe other people would argue otherwise, but this kind of stuff, like when we operate in this kind of like loosey-goosey manner, this is what fosters, you know, like decades of violence. Like people, they lose their parents, they lose their children. they're never going to forgive the people who did that.
Yeah, like the man of the story. I mean, it doesn't seem so far that he's going to join ISIS or anything like that, but you can't blame a guy that's just sitting at home minding his own business, and we drop a bomb and blow his family up if he gets mad at us and wants to fight us. Like, that's reasonable. He should want to fight us.
And this is one guy who's making a reasonable decision, who has every reason not to.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a guy who's actually willing to go and talk to the New York Times. How many people are out there that are not willing to do what he wants to do, and they just want their vengeance?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not just drone strikes that caused...
This wasn't a drone strike. This was an airstrike.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not just those things. When I was over there, a child, I think he was 5, maybe 6 years old, stepped on a landmine that was actually intended for us. You know, he's out playing in his own yard. He gets blown across the yard.
Both ways, blew
his right leg and his left leg. I mean, his right leg and his right arm off. And we had to rush him to the hospital in the Green Zone in Baghdad. And, you know, luckily he lived. We got him some prosthetics and we paid for all that. But, man, now that kid's got to grow up, you know, missing an arm and a leg because we were there.
Yeah. When you go to war, mistakes are going to happen on both sides. And it's going to, I mean,
it's tragic.
It's kind of like in the article, it talks about there's a TED talk where, you know, just imagine yourself in a situation where China has invaded the United States and you're under occupation. There's a puppet government in your state with some dude who China just installed. You didn't get to vote for him or anything. Like, that would probably make you feel pretty crappy. And if there's like fighting going on, you might be sympathetic to the rebels who are trying to overthrow this government. And then your kid gets mauled by rebel activity. You know, now you just hate everyone.
Yeah.
This is kind of like what, like, to make a larger point about this, this is why I get really pissed off about the way that this administration has treated the State Department. Rex Tillerson, for the most part, seems to be inept, like nothing's really getting done, and our reputation just seems to be degrading. You know, we have France picking up our tab for the Paris Climate Agreement. Thank you for France doing that. Germany is taking a more prominent lead in the world because we're not there to kind of assume the helm of NATO and the UN, because Trump apparently wants nothing to do with these organizations and doesn't like them, and he's been bashing them at every opportunity. And then he undermines the State Department on Twitter. How is anybody going to take Rex Tillerson seriously if he goes to meet with North Korea and Trump tweets, "Don't waste your time, Rex"? Like, that is just so unprofessional and disgusting, man. I hope in my heart of hearts that this is just the guy learning his job. And the first year is always gross and disgusting and messy of any presidency, because that does seem to be a historical precedent. But I'm not very optimistic.
Well, it doesn't seem to have gotten any better over the past year. So
no data points for improvement from what I've seen. All right. Earlier in the week, the dumpster fire that is Roy Moore's Senate campaign in Alabama continued to burn with increasing brightness as more allegations and witness accounts piled up, including his signing of a young student's yearbook and his being banned from a local mall for harassing young girls. Conservative media outlets, with few notable exceptions, mostly from the typical Never Trump outlets such as the National Review and other outlets, appear to mostly be ignoring the story, but have been more than happy to report on the dumpster fire of allegations coming out of Hollywood and desperately trying to tie in any way to liberal hypocrisy or Democrats in general. Fox News, looking at you. The mainstream media appears to be mostly echoing condemnations to varying degrees against alleged perpetrators as the battle over abhorrent behavior on the part of male power players in the media continues. So, we talked about Roy Moore last week, and I just have to ask, how is Roy Moore still a viable candidate?
The only answer I can give is that the Republican disdain for Democrats is that great. They just want a Republican in so bad, they're willing to overlook, it would seem, almost any kind of behavior. Just to make sure a liberal doesn't get in there.
This is like the worst of the worst. Like, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this sort of behavior is worse than murder, because you don't have to live with murder. You're dead. Like, this sort of thing you have to live with for the rest of your life when it happens to you. Now, I'm going to couch that by saying that these are allegations, but there's a lot of them. Like, there are over 10 now, I think, and the witness accounts are in the 40s or 50s at this point. Wow. I mean,
I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. This, to my next question, is like, why is it so difficult for Democrats to win in rural southern states? Why does it seem that Southerners like us just don't seem to like Democrats? We're young. We weren't around during civil rights when Democrats were more racist. Like, I don't, give me your thoughts, man, because you're still down there.
The reason it seems to me that it's so difficult for Democrats to win is because nobody listens to them. Like, they just don't want to hear what they have to say. And it's not that they would disagree with what they did have to say. They just don't listen. Don't pay them any attention. They think, God, Democrat, liberal ain't got nothing good to say. I think that's really a major part of it.
Is it really like that bad? It's just like,
well, you know, I'm
people have been so indoctrinated, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of out of place here. I was born and raised here, so I grew up just like the people here. Deeply Republican, very conservative. That's the way I was raised. It was only
last
5 or so years that I've learned the error of my ways. And as I talk to people, man, I can't tell you the number of times I've been laughed at after saying something, you know, like whether it be talking about how as a society we need to chip in, take care of each other, or I mean, just anything that gay people should have the same rights we do. I mean, they just laugh like I've said something crazy. Like I'm the crazy one for thinking that a gay person is the same as me and you. Like, I mean,
yeah, like a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I come from the same sort of background that you did, you know, and I've spent a lot of my growing up was done in the South as well. I mean, I live in Washington now, which is extremely liberal compared to Georgia and Texas, where I spent most of, you know, did most of my growing up. And even before the military, I considered myself somewhat of a libertarian. But yeah, man, I mean, the thing that changed me is like when I got out into the world at large, I guess, you know, being exposed to other people. Like I had some exposure because I was an army brat, but it just got to the point where I got tired of defending racists when I was out of the South. When I was in the South, never had to worry about, you know, my conservative views or anything. Never had to defend, you know, people never like called out allies of mine and called them racists or anything like that. But since I've left the South and as I've traveled around the world and stuff, I've, you know, this stuff has been more noticeable to me. It just like, I just got sick of it. You know, things that are blatantly racist that I always grew up thinking, wow, that's kind of racist. And like, I found other people that agree with me when I got out of the South. And it's like, I don't know what to say, man. Like, yeah.
That's interesting. aside from my time in the Army, you know, I've pretty much been in the South my whole life. So
yeah,
you know, I can't truly understand what you mean by, you know, it's you notice it more. But
yeah, I mean, like the first time for me was when the Tea Party protests started happening, and they were doing the usual stuff, you know, like having Obama dolls with ropes wrapped around their neck and whatnot. And I thought this stuff was, you know, yeah, it's just a few bad apples and what's otherwise probably a bunch of perfectly reasonable constitutionalist voters. And that's kind of the way that I tried to describe it. But it's just like between the police violence, Jeff Sessions' opposition to criminal justice reform when it comes to just the sort of disproportionate targeting of colored people in the criminal justice system at large. Like, that is racism. It doesn't mean that a person is racist, but it means that we have racist institutions that need to be looked at, I guess. But what were you going to say?
No, I'd say it's institutionalized racism is what it is.
Yeah, and I think when you're in that institution, it makes you kind of blind to what's going on. And when you go outside of it, like, I had a guy challenging me on being a libertarian at my very first job when I moved to Washington. And he would just bring up a lot of stuff that I was just not willing to defend. You know, I was like, that doesn't represent me. That doesn't represent my views. And that was my sort of counter argument. And it just got to the point where it's like, I'm sick of being these people's ally, man. Like, I'm sick of defending these people. I'm sick of being in a position where I have to defend these people because they share my political disposition. And I just, yeah, man, I was done with it, man.
Understandable.
Yeah. But moving on, and on the topic of partisanship, early Thursday morning, Leanne Tweeden, a Fox Sports broadcast host, leveled devastating allegations against popular Minnesota Democratic Senator Al Franken, including a lewd photo of the senator appearing to grab her breasts while she slept on a plane coming back from a USO tour in Iraq. Or was it Afghanistan? I can't remember exactly. Senator Franken issued a lackluster statement after the news broke, then later in the day issued a second, more appropriate and thoughtful apology, and offered to fully comply with an ethics investigation. The conservative media was quick to condemn the senator and call for his resignation, while most liberals in the mainstream media took a range of positions from ignoring the story to condemning the senator. What do you think the potential impact of this is?
Well, it's we're at a point now he has the opportunity to set a precedent. He could go ahead and step down and say that, you know, this is unacceptable behavior for a senator, or he could stay in there. And given what's going on with Roy Moore down there, I don't really think that'd be the best move right now. I mean, the allegations are very different, but still quite similar. I mean, you know, not as much on
the part, but Roy still. Moore stuff is orders of magnitude worse by far.
Definitely, you can't take away from that. And then,
like the yearbook thing, like who signs a yearbook that's an adult? Who signs a high school person's yearbook that's an adult? I mean, outside of people who have their own high school kids and people who are teachers, you know, or are around other high school kids. Like, if you're around high school kids in your family or friends, you might sign an odd yearbook here and there. But who goes and signs somebody's yearbook of someone that they have no relationship to? It's just like I said, I don't want to rehash the Roy Moore stuff too much again, but... we're talking about Al Franken now, and yeah, this is bad. You know, the photo, if you looked at it, it's just bad. And this was in 2008. He didn't become a senator until 2009. But you can't tell me that in 2008 he wasn't thinking about his Senate run, if not actively campaigning. He's doing a USO tour. You know, that's part of setting yourself up for this kind of thing.
Yeah, and he knew.
This is just not good behavior. This one, a lot of people, what is it, somebody on Crooked Media put this best thing. They said, woke up to a real gut punch today, which is exactly what I thought when I saw it. I was like, oh.
Yeah, when you sent me the article, same thing. You saw my response.
I was just like, of all people, why does it have to be this guy? But, I mean, you know, that's the reality of it.
So what do you think about all this? Do you think he should resign?
It's complicated, you know? Like, I think that Roy Moore should definitely step aside. Like, for sure. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen, and I have no idea how that's going to go. I wish that Alabama would take a look at Doug Jones and look at him honestly, and just, the guy is a good candidate. He is the type of person that you want in the Senate. The fact that he's a Democrat shouldn't matter. I would have no problem saying that if the Republican was a good person. The guy that they tried to run against him, Roy Moore, was not what I would consider a good candidate for Senate. You know, we don't have to relitigate into that, but on to the point about Al Franken. The sort of best take that made me think about this, and I'm not going to lie, when I saw this, I thought, you know what, Al Franken should resign. And then I kind of tempered myself a little bit and allowed myself to think about it a little bit more, and I heard someone in another podcast make a really good point that, think about it the way that you would a person of the opposite political party. So if you had a senator that you like on the other side, maybe somebody that you just listen to. Like, for me, that's like a Ben Sasse, you know? Like, I listen to him. I don't agree with his political positions, but I listen to him and I think he's a reasonable guy. If he was caught up in something like this, I would think that he should resign. So I think it's only reasonable for me to take the same position with Al Franken. Like, Al Franken is caught up in a thing like this, and I don't think that this is not the kind of behavior that you want from a senator. A senator is supposed to be a higher office. It's supposed to, like, this kind of clowny stuff can happen in the House of Representatives and not be a big deal, but a Senate position is much more important. And I don't think this behavior is the kind of thing that a senator should be able to get away with. Like, Roy Moore is a blatant example of what shouldn't happen. But Al Franken is a minor example of where I think it's a close call, but I think he should step down. How about you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. It's, if he doesn't, then it says it's okay, and it's not. It's just not.
Yeah, I mean, it says it's okay to have this kind of behavior in your past, which is still, I think that's where I'm drawing the line.
And, well, you know, people in higher positions, you know, it's I would imagine it's got to be tempting to use that power to, you know, for personal gain like that. But, yeah, you know, you just can't do that. You have to have respect for people and bodily autonomy. That's important. And especially somebody who wants to be a senator really has got to understand that. That's.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm couching this in the fact that I did like the apology that Al Franken sent out, the second apology. The first reaction was not a good reaction, which is part of the problem for sure. The second reaction was the appropriate reaction that he should have had first. And the woman accepted his apology for the incident. I'm taking all of this stuff into consideration when I make this determination. Now, I'm going to say that it's not up to me. This is ultimately up to the voters in Minnesota. But my personal opinion is that if you are in a situation like this, you should most definitely step down. And we shouldn't be electing people who have this kind of stuff in their closet. You know, like, I know comedians do some wacky stuff. And, you know, maybe that puts comedians outside of the realm of being able to run for Senate. You know, I don't know. It sucks, you know. I'm not happy to see Al Franken doing this stuff, and I don't think a person who engages in this sort of behavior belongs in the Senate, and that's just where I have to draw the line. I have to take a hard stance there.
Well, I'll tell you one outcome I really hope doesn't happen is Al Franken decides to step down and then Roy Moore wins.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real possibility, too.
Yeah, like, that could be a reality. Because
the environment seems to be pushing that direction. But I will say that the bench in Minnesota is really good. This is where Keith Ellison is from. They have a really good district attorney. The governor is a Democrat. They will be able to appoint somebody to his position that is a Democrat. And even when they have a special election to replace him, if he does decide to step down, I think a Democrat would have a pretty good chance at winning. So that's sort of the upside to that. But it's for me, it's like the behavior thing. Like, it's a Senate position. I just have to draw a hard line there, man. Can't.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on that one. You know, these are people we're dependent on to be our leaders. And, you know,
absolutely.
They've got to be held to a higher standard. They just have to be.
And this, we're saying this knowing all of the stuff that goes on with Trump, believe me. We know about all his allegations. We know about his current behavior. Like, trust me, we're just not going to get into all that right now. Another day.
Another 2 days.
Maybe. All right. Moving on to the final topic. The GOP-controlled House managed to pass their tax reform bill Thursday, 227 votes to 205, with 13 Republican dissenters and not a single Democrat. The bill is historically unpopular, according to a compilation of public polls on similar legislation from the past 30 years in a Washington Post article published on November 18th, appearing to be only more popular than the similarly historically unpopular GOP health care bill that failed to pass in the Senate this year. Spectacularly. Thanks, John McCain. The latest Harvard-Harris poll since November 16th put Republican support for this plan at about 75%, but 77% of Democrats and 56% of independents oppose the plan, which is an overall average of about 54% opposing the plan. So, what do you think, Stephen? you think it's worth the risk to just push it through? Or, like, what are they doing, man?
To them, it seems that it would be. And I would also like to give a shout-out to John McCain. Thank you. Good job, dude.
Yeah.
This bill is clearly directed towards corporations and the higher-ups, the 1%. And yeah, I guess to them, it's definitely going to be worth it. So.
Yeah, I will point out that the 538 average has Trump's disapproval rating at 55.8 as of today. And this was only a few days ago that this was taken, and the average disapproval is, you can consider this a disapproval rating as well, 54%. That's pretty close. That's about plus or minus 2%. So I'm not going to say it's outside of the norm, but it definitely seems to be universal that 55% or so of the country does not like the way that things are going. Moving on to the digging deeper part, Chief Economic Advisor for the Trump administration, Gary Cohn, has been one of the biggest promoters of the GOP tax reform plan. At a Wall Street Journal CEO Council conference, Cohn was apparently dismayed by the reaction to a question about spending more on growth. Many of the attendees did not offer an affirmative about growth spending when asked what they would spend the excess capital on after tax reform was passed. Bank of Merrill Lynch conducted a corporate risk management survey which found capital expenditure to be the fourth most popular choice out of seven, potential choices for which any number could be chosen at a mere 35% of respondents selecting this choice, suggesting only about one out of three would choose to spend some of the money in this way. And I want to emphasize that. It wasn't like a pick one and you can only pick this one. You're just supposed to pick sort of the range of choices that you would spend this money on. And only one third of people said that they would spend any amount of it on that. That doesn't bode well. The most popular choice was paying down debt at 65%, share repurchases at 46%, mergers and acquisitions at third with 42%. An interview with John Harwood, Cohn exclaimed, "The most excited group out there are big CEOs in a misguided effort to appeal for support for the bill. The plan is expected to lower the corporate tax rate from 35 to 20%. So Stephen's done a lot of digging into this bill this week. And is there any upside to this bill at all? Or what?
For corporations, yes. For everyone else, not so much. I mean, we're getting a higher child tax credit and a new family credit, and
yeah, that seems good.
The brackets are changing. That's going to help some of the lower guys a little bit, but you know they're pretty much paying for all these tax cuts for the rich with repealing some personal exemption and lots of individual deductions from the middle and lower class, and it's just not right.
So it's like stuff that middle and lower class people use to lower their taxes, and they're
yeah. The personal exemption crap out of there right now is at like $4,100, and that's just gone.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. that's the thing that each person within the household can get, and then for each person, it's gone. I mean,
yeah, this is crazy, man. I mean, yeah, I was just having a discussion with some dude on a board talking about the tax rate that companies pay. The current marginal tax rate for corporations is 35%. This past year and the year before, Boeing paid around 23% taxes. This is with a 35% marginal rate. Boeing managed to pay 23% taxes. What do you think Boeing's tax bill is going to look like at a 20% marginal rate? I don't even know what to say about this. And this is like after years about hearing Republicans complain about the debt. They're just going to $1.8 trillion, I think, is what the CBO said.
1.8? Okay, I thought it was 1.4. All right. 1.8 then.
It was either 1.8 or 1.7.
Well, I know they signed off on a 1.5 increase to the budget. So
I read a Wall Street Journal article, I think. I don't know. It was some business magazine that said that the CBO estimate was wrong. Like, it was actually probably going to be higher. And what they're doing is insane. Is what they were saying. Yeah, like I don't know what is going on, man. It doesn't... This... Maybe we're just in a super liberal bubble or something, but this... There's like... I don't understand it, man.
No, I jotted down a little list of some of the things that are being... Or some of the deductions that are being repealed on alimony payment, the personal exemption, which I mentioned, the elderly and disabled credits being eliminated, the electric vehicle credits being eliminated, so people that you know, trying to be good on the environment are no longer going to get that. You know, it wasn't much anyways. I don't remember what it was. But, you know, they're no longer going to be able to deduct for that. Employer provided dependent care and child care. They're not going to be able to deduct for that anymore. So, you know, who's that going to cost? Educator expenses, their deductions, like, you know, if teachers buy, you know, out-of-pocket supplies for their students, they can no longer deduct that. Just several more things like that. Like adoption expenses, that's another thing. Can't deduct for that anymore.
Man.
The pro life like, don't want you to adopt, apparently.
Oh my goodness. That's what's so. It seems like they're just. I mean, I guess this goes to the next part where. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read the next part. So last week, when asked about the consequences of not passing tax reform, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham was quoted saying, "The party fractures. Most incumbents in 2018 will get a severe primary challenge. A lot of them will probably lose. The base will fracture. The financial contributions will stop. But other than that, it'll be fine." Which seems to be the whole plan is a transparent attempt at paying off GOP donors with taxpayer funds. Many GOP operatives are trying to claim that this will not add anything to the deficit, but the Congressional Budget Office, I mentioned this earlier, reported estimates that the current version of the bill will add $1.7 trillion over 10 years to the deficit. So, yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, I don't understand why conservative voters don't see what's going on here. Is it literally like, do they only tune into AM radio and listen to Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and they don't look at anything outside of that spectrum? What is going on?
It would seem that way. I mean, that Gary, you know, there's been a few videos of Gary Cohn, you know, talking this bill up, and he's a good speaker. I mean, he's good at it. He's got that sales pitch down. I mean, he's, you know, it's like you mentioned earlier when he was talking about the CEOs are loving this. Like, he pitched that like that was such a good thing that every American should be so happy that the CEOs are getting a tax cut. And I don't know, man. I don't get how they're not like, whoa, wait a minute, what about me?
$700, Steven, according to Paul Ryan. You're going to get $700 if you're a single mom.
Oh, no, I can go buy that iPhone.
You can start your savings account. 20 years of that, and you can have $18,000 to pay for your child's college. $18,000 will go a long way in 2040, right?
I bet it will. put all your kids in college with that.
I don't even know what to say anymore. Like, this is depressing.
Well, all we can do is
I gotta work on this, man. We gotta pick some less depressing topics in the future. I feel like this one's been such a downer. Holy crap! Yeah, but I mean, this is a real thing. Like, people have said that this tax bill needs to be talked about. People need to call their senators. They need to call their representatives, and they need to voice their discontent. If you are a person who lives in a place where there is a Republican senator or a Republican congressman, you need to call them and you need to voice your discontent for certain. I do not have that luxury because I live in Washington State and both of my senators are Democrats, and most of my the only representative that matters is the one of the district that you live in, and mine is also a Democrat there. So they're opposing it. My representatives are doing their job, but they just don't have power right now. Yeah, man. People need to wake up. They need to read about this. They need to really dig into the details.
That's the
thing. If they don't like what they see, they need to say something. Don't be blind. Don't not look at what's going on and think that just because your dude won that you're going to be winning, because this is Washington. I'm going to try to be the same way. You know, if we keep doing this in the future and the pendulum swings the other direction, I'm going to be looking at the people that I support, making sure that they're doing their job the way that they need to be doing their job. But right now, it's not swinging that way, and I feel like these guys have just kind of been given carte blanche to do what they want, and nobody's saying anything. And some people are going to get hurt by this, I feel like, and it's not going to feel good.
Well, I have one thing to add to that, and I hate that this seems to be the case, but you know, a lot of why this things like this go over so well with them is because it's so much easier just to hear Gary Cohn say it's a good idea and say, oh, yep, it's a good idea, good tax plan, than to read into it and actually look for yourself. I mean, it's unfortunate that that's the case, but it is. It's just easier to listen and take someone's word for it. And unfortunately, yeah, it's not going to work out to everyone's advantage.
That's probably true. I mean, to be fair, it doesn't look good for the tax bill. I think Ron Johnson already came out and said that he's not going to support any effort like this, but he's doing it for reasons that politically I don't agree with, so who knows. I've heard that he's doing this so he can, you know, get the stuff that he wants also. But on the other hand, you know, you still have the dissenters in the middle, like the McCains and the Corkers. There is opposition to this type of stuff, for certain. I can't remember all of the opposition to it, but it's going to be, if they can only lose 3 votes in the Senate, I think it's going to be extremely difficult for them to pass this through the Senate, even though they managed to get it through the House. The exact same thing happened in healthcare.
Well, what's the timeline on it? When's the vote?
This is why they're pushing so hard, because they're running out of time to conduct business for this kind of thing. They got to approve a budget soon, and the clock is ticking, you know? The fiscal year is over. That happened in October.
Yeah.
Tax deadlines for this year have already hit, and people are in the first quarter of the next fiscal year already. That's what we're moving into. You know? So, yeah. I mean, on the speculative, if this does fail, do you think there's any hope for bipartisan tax reform?
Well, if there was ever going to be a time for it, this would be it. I mean,
it did appear that
the healthcare plan failed, and if this fails too, then surely they'll see that they're going to have to work together.
I would hope so. I mean, you did see Trump try to make the gesture towards Schumer and Pelosi at one point over the DACA stuff, but nothing has really come of that. So I'm not optimistic, but. I mean, how many spectacular failures can you endure for major legislation before you figure out that you got to do some bipartisanship?
Hopefully not many more.
It's crazy. So, yeah, I guess we can wrap it up now. We'll do the final segment. I'm going to go first because mine is kind of depressing, and I'm hoping that you got something good for us that can be a little more uplifting, so I'm going to make you go second.
When you said that, I can't believe I totally forgot about that. I could.
While I talk about my part, you look something up. Hopefully, something uplifting, Steven, depending on you. All right.
What am I going to do here? Give me a few minutes. I'll find something cool.
Yeah, get it. And I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about. Yeah. Do what you got to do. The thing that I'm going to talk about in the final segment is net neutrality.
Cool.
Net neutrality is important. Net neutrality is what enables things like this to happen. It enables me to record my own podcast, get my own voice out there. It enables companies to carry my podcast basically for nothing. You know, it enables a lot of freedom on the internet. And there are arguments against net neutrality, and most of them, I think, are pretty weak. Net neutrality is something that should be supported. There are countries that don't have this kind of legislation, and their internet looks like garbage, and it acts like garbage. When you don't have this, companies get a larger amount of sort of authority over what they can do. They can suppress things. They can push things the way that they want to push them. If they don't want your voice to be heard, you know, they can make you host your podcast on a place that is garbage, and, you know, you don't get good bandwidth for people downloading. They can limit the amount of people that can download stuff from you. They can limit people's ability to consume media. The internet is eventually going to end up being a public utility. I know a lot of people are resistant to this idea, but that's what's going to happen. We have 2 cable companies in the United States, Time Warner and Comcast. Most people are under these cable companies. This is an effective duopoly. this kind of thing is not sustainable. It's not going to last forever. Republicans have power now and they're not going to do anything about it, I'm sure. And it might be like this for a while, but it's not going to last forever. Eventually, this kind of stuff is going to break. And because the internet is so important for our day-to-day life, we are going to have to defend it with solid legislation like what net neutrality presents for us. And yeah, man, like this is another thing that I think people need to pay attention to, like the tax bill. Ajit Pai, who's on the FCC, is going to have a vote on net neutrality soon, and they're going to try to get rid of it. And this is not going to benefit regular people. Seriously, people, please pay attention to what's going on in the world. Do not let people get away with crap like this. So, Steven, come pull us out of this depressing hole that we have let ourselves get into.
Okay, I'd stop recording if I were you.
No, you're good, man.
Oh, just, you gotta give
we'll,
me
that. Yeah, we'll let it run until you find something, and I'll cut it out later.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, any topic you want to talk about.
Dude, I'm sorry, man. I totally fucking forgot about this shit. I've been reading so much into these taxes. I was thinking, Monday, Tuesday, I was actually...
Do you want to talk about that? The thing with EA and have you seen that on Reddit?
No, what? Like EA Sports?
Yeah, like they tried to make Battlefront 2, the new Star Wars game they released, like this real huge pay-to-play pit, and it is just like gamers are done. They are just like so outraged by it. Like the backlash has been so nasty that EA's stock prices took a hit. They've issued an apology. The apology was not well received, and it was just like, nope, it's not enough. Like, people are done with that crap. Like, EA and Ubisoft is a bad offender as well, but EA is one of the worst when it comes to video games and trying to like just monetize every aspect of consumption when it comes to gaming. And ugh. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it's getting the same sort of level of outrage that this sort of sexual harassment stuff is getting in the gaming community because, yeah, man, we're not your cash cows, you know? We like the media, the medium, but we're not your cash cows. You can't just milk us for money with all these little pay-to-play tricks. There is some gross stuff going on out there. Like, I think one company, I think it was Activision or something, they did a thing to where they had the algorithm that does your matchmaking match you against people that are most likely to beat you unless you buy a boost from the cash shop. And when you buy a boost from the cash shop, they match you up against opponents that are you're more likely to win against. So they're feeding you into the psychology that if you buy something from the store, you sort of get lucky, you know, and you start winning more, and it sort of reinforces a positivity. They're playing with your mind, man. Like, this is gross abuse of power, and it absolutely deserves the kind of backlash that it's gotten. So, you got any thoughts on that, man? You can have this one, since you didn't do your homework.
Well, I mean, you pretty much covered everything on that one. You're right. They're wanting to just make cash cows out of these games, and it's not about the gaming anymore. It's about them making money, and it's difficult for a player like me. Like, I don't have a lot of money to put into games. I'd love to play some of them, but I just can't these days. Like, I would like to play Star Wars: The Old Republic, but I just can't. I don't have money for it. Yeah. And that's not like a pay to win game. You know, you can still play some of the game without having to pay anything but the monthly fee, but still.
Well, that's actually a good point, because like the pay to win thing, there are games out there that are good models for money. Like Hearthstone is a great model for how to make a reasonable game and still be able to extract money, and other places are picking up on this. Like, they made an Elder Scrolls game that's sort of a card game, and I don't know if it's going to be good or bad. I haven't played it at all, but I know Hearthstone you can download for free. There's always a relatively cheap competitive deck that you can spend a little bit of time grinding your way to. The matchmaking system is what it is. You know, I don't play it a lot these days, so I don't know the details. But that's, nobody has a problem. Like, people, it's balanced, you know? They can make money off of it. And The fact that they sell stuff to you, they give you the game for free. You can download it right now onto your phone. You can download it on your computer right now, and you can play it with the crappy cards, but you can play it for free. Like, you can play the game for free. Battlefront 2 was a $40 or $60 AAA release that they are trying to do this sort of thing with. And that, in my opinion, is just unacceptable.
Oh, also, I have something really kind of cute. So give me just a minute. Like a,
all right, sure. Absolutely,
give me,
man.
Give me just a minute. I'm trying to look up pronunciation. Yeah, I'm looking up the pronunciation of this word. Shawamis? Shuwaymis. Shawamis. But it's in Saudi Arabia. So, I don't know. Shawamis and Jubba. Or Jubba. J-U-B-B-A-H. Jubba or Jubba?
It's not Jedda?
Oh, here. I'll
DDA?
No, J-U-B-B-A-H. J-U. Hmm. Jubba?
I don't know. I think it would be like Jubba.
Well, I'll just say Northwestern. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably best.
All right, so. All right, well, as Americans, we mostly love man's best friend. I'm not sure the percentages, yep. But I'd say most people have dogs. I think that's a reasonable statement.
There's definitely affinity for cats on the internet, though.
Well, you know, you get cats and dog pics, but speaking of, now that you say that, cats on the internet and dogs on the internet, that's what I'm talking about. IFL Science has put out an article, and Northwestern Saudi Arabia, there were some cave drawings found of people with their dogs, and they're, you know, some of them are even on leashes. They're let's see, 8,000 or 9,000 years old, and 147 separate scenes, and involve hunting in a range of environments, and in several images, dogs are chasing what looks like, or it looks like they're chasing something as a man's drawing a bow. So they're showing them with their hunting dogs at the very least. You know, maybe not have been, you know, the same as us posting pictures of our cute little dogs, but. But still, Cape Angus, man and his best friend.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, man. Yeah. It definitely, like, I think it is thought that domestication of dogs goes back about 10,000 years. And
yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's looks like it. I mean, I thought it would be a little less than them, like, leashing them up 10,000 years ago, but I guess we figured that out fast.
No. I'm looking at this one picture of this guy. He's got two dogs on a leash.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
That's cool find, man. I'm glad we get to end it on a positive note.
Yeah.
Because this was a depressing one, man.
Yeah. Well, just know 10,000 years ago, people were still taking pictures of them and their dog. As much all as right. taking a picture could be when you got to carve it into a rock. But
yeah. Well, you could paint. I'm sure it was a little bit of both, but you know.
Yeah, they are. They're actually both on here.
All right. I guess the last thing I'm going to end it with is I'm going to apologize for this episode coming out late. Normally, we would try to record on Sunday, but we had some technical difficulties. So the editing process, hopefully I will get this at least up by midnight tonight. But yeah, with that said, I guess we will see everybody next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Words? Well, yep. Thanks for having me on, and you know, hope everybody enjoys the podcast. And like you said, talk to everybody next week.
Yep. All right.